JJ Jackson here in the studio with Tom Peavy and Ryan Lavoy. And now we've got our guy, Eric McDade. We're covering the bases with Eric McDade, State Farm. DriveWithEric.com for all of your insurance needs. It's Iron Bowl week, brother.
Yes, sir.
Which also means it's Thanksgiving week.
That's right.
Look, this is your first year here on the airwaves with us, and what a fun year it's been. And this time of year, it's really important that we throw out controversial Thanksgiving hot takes. The floor is yours. I would like for you to present one for me.
Turkey is trash.
Turkey is trash.
I mean,
of a ham guy.
Listen, man, I don't do the turkey. I mean, my wife makes a really good turkey. I mean, for the people that like turkey,
right?
It's not my thing.
Turkey's not my thing either.
You ever had fried turkey?
I like fried turkey. It's not bad, but you know, in general,
when you can have another meat, you want to go for another meat.
Yeah, I'm more of the ham kind of guy. The turkey thing is, somebody earlier was telling me, shout out my friend Jasmine. She was telling me this someplace in Atlanta that has a jerk turkey, like, you know, spicy.
Yeah,
uh-huh. I might be able to do that, but. Yeah, turkey is just—it's not for me, man.
Now, do you go since you go? Well, do you still do turkey at Thanksgiving, or do you do ham at Thanksgiving?
I do both. You know, you got to put a little bit of turkey on your plate just
to say you did it.
Just to say you did it. Say you had a little bit. And my wife is always responsible for making the turkey, so you know, I have to. You know,
you got to get brownie points with her.
Yeah,
I get it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So. I'm not a big turkey guy. I don't really have a lot of other hot takes. I don't like. Cranberry sauce is pretty bad, too.
Thank you.
I'm not a cranberry
sauce guy.
All right, we're all on the same page there. Good.
Now, okay, one last question about ham and turkey. Do you do ham at Christmas as well, or do you do something else? Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. Ham is a staple, man. We got to have the ham. If the honey-baked ham don't come through, I'm not going to be there.
No kidding. Do you have a controversial Thanksgiving take for us, Tom? That was a good one. He's getting out in front with the ham over the turkey take. And anti-cranberry sauce. Those are the top two.
Yeah. Well, see, but I'm not a... Just kind of along those lines, I don't like stuffing or dressing. Whether you call it stuffing or dressing.
Yeah, people want to debate that. I think I use it interchangeably. Like, I don't know that I necessarily have a...
It's dressing.
Dressing.
I call it stuffing. I don't know. Because you stuff the turkey with it sometimes. I don't know.
Either way, I don't like it. I'm not... Cranberry sauce... Stuffing / dressing, no. I'm a turkey ham. My mom makes the mac and cheese, and then I usually make another side dish. That's my dinner. Some buttered rolls.
I used to not like stuffing / dressing, but I've gotten into it a little bit the last couple Thanksgiving, so I've warmed up on that.
Sweet tea with your Thanksgiving meal?
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
Gotta have sweet tea.
Yeah, you're not doing it right.
Yes, as well.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're all on the same page then. There you go.
I think we'd all like each other's meals then.
Yes, I would agree with that. Thanksgiving, a pretty big deal. Like, what are the get-together plans for the McDade family coming up on Thursday?
It's always a big deal. I got a big family, and a lot of my family's from around here, so it's always fun to just get together.
Where are we gathering?
Probably my mom's house.
Mom's house.
My mom's house is probably going to be the spot, man.
That's awesome. And then we got the Iron Bowl coming up on Saturday.
Yes, sir.
Auburn 1-6 in Iron Bowls, played in Tuscaloosa against Nick Saban. The Tigers have been outscored in those meetings on average 42-17. Those are not competitive football games when Auburn plays Nick Saban in Tuscaloosa.
No, not in large part. They've had a couple of games that have been competitive for a stretch. I remember the one, what was it, 18 with Tua in Tuscaloosa, where Auburn's down, I think, 17-14 at half, and was hanging around for the third quarter
for a while.
Then Tua went off in the second half. There's also that 2014 Iron Bowl where Auburn lost 55-44 that you can argue it was close and you argue it wasn't close just because Auburn got a two-possession lead in that game. And then that's the famous, you know, Lane Kiffin arms in the air before Amari Cooper has even passed Jonathan Jones in the secondary. And then Bama gets out, and I think they got as high as a 3-score lead in the fourth before Auburn scored, like, last play of the game type of thing. So, you know, Auburn's had moments of competitiveness, but they've also gotten slopped a couple times. The Iron Bowls here in Auburn are always close. I mean, it really doesn't even matter. The only one that was semi-not was 2015. the Derrick Henry year for Alabama. But again, even that, I think it was 32-13 was the final. But even that, Auburn had the ball at midfield in the fourth quarter down 19-13. So even that was result in doubt for three quarters plus. So, you know, there in Tuscaloosa, it's been harder. And look, I mean, it's due to what Tuscaloosa can be as an environment, but also what Jordan Hare is an environment, because a lot of times, I mean, let's just be honest, Alabama's been better than Auburn. So most years that's been true. And so what kind of helps even things out? Sometimes a great home field advantage. And when you go to Tuscaloosa, that obviously does not work in Auburn's favor. And if they're already coming in as the weaker team, which again, this year, that's going to be the case. You know, if this was in Auburn, as you saw last year, I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be a close game. We'll see if Auburn makes the upset, but in Tuscaloosa, really the only thing that Auburn has going for it is the momentum that Cadillac's building, you know, and the positivity around the program for the first time in a couple years. But just football wise, I mean, even though Alabama maybe is one of their weaker teams under Saban, which is still saying a lot because they're 9-2 still, but even though it's one of their perceived weaker teams, I mean, still, just on the field, Alabama's quite a bit better. So, you know, I think, you know, it's just it's going to have to be about Auburn's energy and just trying to create weird plays, trying to create turnovers, trying to make a big play that energizes the team. That's what's going to ultimately you're going to need out of Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, I think Auburn's going to have to, like you said, manufacture some turnovers. I mean, this is a game where guys aren't going to quit regardless, just because it's a rivalry. And I think what you've seen since Cadillac's been the head coach is these guys, you know, they play hard every play. And, I mean, you gotta have that this week. hopefully we can kind of continue the formula that's worked the last couple weeks, just running the football. I mean, that's going to be a lot tougher against Bama than it was against maybe A&M or Western Kentucky. But just stick to the script, man. Try to run the ball. And, you know, Robbie's got to limit the mistakes. And when he's got some opportunities, we got to hit him. I think that's kind of one thing that we've missed maybe the last couple weeks. You know, we've had some opportunities and he's missed some guys, but you never know what could happen in this game, man. But if we can force some turnovers and we can get our defense to, you know, play hard, just try to make it a four-quarter game and see what happens.
There's very clearly going to be the extra motivation, the Cadillac Williams dynamic and angle to this game, and wanting to win for your coach and wanting to get that sixth one of the year and put yourself in bowl eligibility. And we talked yesterday that maybe with APR scores and that sort of thing, Auburn can still go to a bowl game this year with five wins. Regardless of all of that, you look at this Auburn football team. Even if Brian Harsin was still the coach, you would want to see the Tigers win in Tuscaloosa just because it's been that long. Yeah. And you real as an Auburn fan, I think you would just love to see the television images of a silenced Bryant Denny Stadium being upset by the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, the last time we beat
it's been Alabama too long.
In Tuscaloosa, we had maybe the greatest college football player of all time. And it took an incredible effort from him to even win that game.
Yeah. So,
I don't know, man. It's gonna be tough. I don't want to pick us to lose, but it's gonna be tough, man. It's gonna take everything they got over there to try to pull it out.
And then we'll see what the coaching dynamic looks like as well, and what that is as signing day nears, as the transfer portal window opens. Right now, Auburn is projected to make it to the Liberty Bowl to play Baylor, even with a seventh loss on the season. So things left to be determined and left to be played for with this Auburn football team. Is Lane Kiffin the next head coach? Is he the next head coach? Many people think he is. We said it earlier. We think he is. And we'll talk about that and a whole lot more after this next time out. You're listening to Sports Call.
Tweeters.
Follow our Sports Call host, JJ Jackson, on Twitter by searching @_JJ_Jackson_. And follow the show on Twitter by searching @SportsCallAU.
Hashtag, is that two words? This is former Auburn football player Danny Skutak, and you are listening to the Abby Award-winning Sports Call Auburn.
Welcome back in to Auburn's first and Auburn's favorite sports talk show, Sports Call, Tiger 95.9 FM and on the Tiger Communications app. J.J. Jackson with Tom Peavy, Ryan LaVoy, and Eric McDade as we're covering the bases with Eric McDade, State Farm. Sports Call can now be heard on Amazon Alexa devices. Open the Alexa app on your iPhone or Android and tap the menu icon at the top left. Tap Skills and Games in the menu and search for Sports Call Auburn. Select the skill, then tap Enable to Use, and you're done. All you have to do now is say, hey, Alexa, play Sports Call Auburn, and you're listening to Auburn's first and Auburn's favorite sports talk show. Let's keep covering those bases. You can find all of our previous conversations with E-Money, Eric McDade, on our website, thetiger.fm. He's got his own tab. He's got his own section and a lot of space on the website, giving him some love. DriveWithEric.com. What's the message you're spreading out to folks this time of year, Eric?
It's holiday season, man.
It is.
Everybody's on the road. Listen, man, be careful out there. You know, as we know, more people on the road usually means more accidents. So just really encouraging people to, I know it sounds simple, but just do the things to keep us all safe on the road, right? Defensive driving, wear your seatbelt, just that kind of stuff, man, I think is really important. Try to limit the number of accidents and, you know, keep that down during the holiday season.
All of your needs, drivewitheric.com. He'd be happy to help you out with those. Let me ask you this, Eric. Mm-hmm. Is Len Kiffin the next coach at Auburn?
I think so, man. That Twitter thing last night was going crazy. just trying to figure it out, man. He's an ultimate troll, so it's really hard to get a read on it.
You're going to buy into that as an Auburn fan, though, aren't you?
Oh, 100%. I think it's a match made in heaven. I was actually just telling somebody that on text. Like, I just think it's, you know, Auburn Twitter with Lane Kiffin, you know, doing what he does. I mean, I think it would be awesome. It really just feels it's trending that way, man. If you listen to his press conferences, like, he's really deflecting a lot. He hadn't signed that extension that apparently they put in front of him almost a week ago now. It feels that way. And you got to just – you know, I listened to his press conference yesterday, and they asked him, how do you feel about winning three games against Mississippi State? And first thing he said was something about the leaking facility. And we got a $92 million facility, man. That thing's nice. So, you know, if you he's complaining about the fans, man, we just had 85,000 people in there for a game against another 3-6 team. I was in there. I've been to probably 50, 60 Auburn games in my life at least, and – that atmosphere for 2, 3, and 6 teams and 40-degree weather was insane. It was sold out. And, you know, Ole Miss is struggling to keep fans in the stands. So if he want to come to a place where you can get to the chicken, this is where he needs to be.
He can have his ham and his turkey.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm saying. Hey, this is the place to be, Lane. So it feels that way, man. I'm hoping so. You know, I'm not
$92 million facility.
Listen.
Brand spanking new.
I mean, what more can you ask
for? Brand new.
I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, man. So, you have the opportunity to come over here and be, maybe go directly against Nick Saban, take him down. I think Lane would really relish something like that, man. So, it looks that way. You know, I'm kind of hoping it goes that way because I really like Lane as a coach. I know he can get in here and turn it around quickly as well. So,
yeah, you know, it was interesting. Every tea leaf is pointing in the Kiffin-Auburn direction. I will not say anything definitive. I do not want to jinx this. That has been the guy I have wanted for a long time, so I am not going to say any definitives here. But when you're talking about a performance at Arkansas that was lacking focus – they had 700 yards against Arkansas, and they lost because they had so many penalties and so many turnovers and so many plays called back. You know, you see another press conference yesterday where Kiffin made some type of comment about not leaking in the locker room or something like that.
Yeah. Or leaking roof or something.
Leaking roof. Mm-hmm. You have him, you know, doing mention to the Pine Box from the Tuberville time. Like, there's nothing good going on. And you mentioned also, Eric, you know, the contract extension that's not been signed. Got asked about this on the show on Friday by Wardam Steve, and he said, at what point, you know, does it become, you know, telling that he's not signing it? And, you know, Steve wanted a quicker timeline, but I said, let's get through the weekend and start next week, and then if he's still not signed it, then that's a problem for Ole Miss. Well, it's a day into the next week and he's still not signed it. That's a problem for Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. You know, it's clear there's interest there. And again, we've gone over all the reasons why there should be. So many people get too caught up on 1 to 2 years of results. I've said this conversation and had this argument with many different people in the last week or two. Maybe you all have heard it, maybe you haven't. But essentially, a couple years of success does not override decades of how something has been. Sure, on the football field, since Lane Kiffin's been at Ole Miss, Ole Miss has been better than Auburn, clearly.
Sure.
That does not override the decades where Auburn was the superior program. And, you know, it would be different if Kiffin had been at Ole Miss for 15 years and they'd won a couple national championships and had a Heisman Trophy winner and won several SEC titles. That would be different. Ole Miss is one of four programs to have not been in the SEC title game. That has not happened. They have still not been. Okay, and so you can tout whatever success that Lane's had at Ole Miss and say, well, right now Ole Miss has just as much talent as Auburn, or they're having more success than Auburn. That's great. But there's still a ceiling there at Ole Miss that is lower than the ceiling that is at Auburn. And that is why this is a tough decision for Lane Kiffin. Obviously, to leave somewhere, it is painful in some ways. He appreciates the University of Mississippi for giving him a path back into major college football after his time at Florida Atlantic. He has obviously shown there is a level of enjoyment and success that he can find at Ole Miss, going to a New Year's Six Bowl last year, having a competent team again this year. Like I said, one of the more successful programs in the SEC the 3 years that Kiffin has been there. That is all great, and those are things that he is thinking about and enjoying that in his time at Ole Miss. However, again, you're already seeing that he's been frustrated with facilities. He's been frustrated with NIL money and the lack thereof. It's nothing to do with the money he's being paid. He's not happy with the resources that the University of Mississippi has. Why does the University of Mississippi not have the resources that he wants to have? It's because for the last 3 or 4 decades, they have been inferior to Auburn University. And that is the reason why right now you're looking at a situation where he is, for all the world, looking like he's going to go to Auburn, not because he thinks Auburn is some diamond in the rough these last 3 years. They've actually got a lot of talent on the roster. If I go there, they're going to be 11-1 next year. They just need the right guidance. It's because history says time and time and time again, the ceiling at Auburn is higher than the ceiling at Ole Miss. And this would be the same equation for a lot of other schools if they were coming knocking to Lane Kiffin right now. Because while Ole Miss plays in the SEC, it's still in the Southeast, so it has a lot of opportunities to recruit. It does not have the resources in terms of facility and money that most of these other schools in big-time college football in the South has. And that's why, if it's not this weekend, Lane Kiffin will ultimately leave Ole Miss at some point because he will run out of places to go.
The other thing, the resources are not there, but it's also the state law in Mississippi that says that they can only sign a 4-year contract. Mm-hmm. And Lane Kiffin's wanting to sign something that's longer than just a 4-year, instead of having to keep going through this every 4 years. So at Auburn, you can sign him to a 10-year contract. So that's also that's a big deal right there to not be just handcuffed to only 4 years. So, yeah, I mean, the resources are there for him. And if he's been able to have the success where he is at, he had success at Florida Atlantic or International?
Florida Atlantic.
Had the success at Florida Atlantic, has now had the success at Ole Miss. And those are places that don't have nearly the resources Auburn has. So you would think, you would imagine, that when he comes to a place that has every single resource he could possibly imagine, it seems like the sky's the limit for him.
Yeah, and when you talk about that ceiling, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Ole Miss has probably hit that ceiling, right? Going to a New Year's Six Bowl, you know, another really good year this year. I just don't think it gets much better than that at Ole Miss, regardless of what you do. So if you start to really line up everything, you know, just history, facilities, NIL, you know, it's hard for me to think that he would see that Ole Miss could be a better job for him long term. Like you said, maybe next year he'd have a better team at Ole Miss, but I mean, who knows? I mean, if he gets in here, you know, transfer portal, gets a couple guys to stay, you know, this could be a really competitive team next year. And then going forward, I mean, I'd love to see what Lane Kiffin could do recruiting with the resources that we have.
We want this to happen. And every team, you want to talk about a quarterback. I want to talk about a Lane Kiffin quarterback for Auburn University. Who the hell is that? I know we teased that a little bit on yesterday's show. Guys could come back. Quarterbacks currently on the roster for Auburn could transfer. That's talking points for us to have in the final hour of Sports Call here today. What a fun show we're having. We're covering the bases with our guy, Eric McDade. Let's take a break, and we're back with more fun right after this. Alongside Ryan Lavoie, Tom Peavy, and Eric McDade, my name is JJ Jackson. 2 hours in the books, and we're rolling.
Two hours of Sports Call are finished. Don't touch that radio dial. We've got one more hour to go. Whether you're leaving work, cruising around town, or listening on demand, we've still got some fun left for you. To be part of the show, give us a call at 334-887-3401 locally or toll free at 1-888-9-TIGER-9. Auburn's first and Auburn's favorite sports talk show has been on the air since 1995 and is ready for 60 more minutes of fun. Now, let's get this hour of Sports Call started.
Third and final hour of Sports Call here today on Tiger 95.9 FM and on the Tiger Communications app. JJ Jackson inside the studio with Ryan Lavoie, Tom Peavy, and our guy Eric McDade as we get set to cover the bases here. 1 hour left to go on this Tuesday. We will not be on the air on Thursday or Friday as we get set to celebrate the Thanksgiving holiday. If you would like to be a part of the show in the final hour, call us 334-887-3401. Again, we want to keep working way to the Iron Bowl on Saturday, talking about the Auburn football coaching search that is ongoing and more. So, as we get started in the final hour of the program, let's give you our daily show recap.
We've already finished the first 2 hours of Sports Call today.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It jumped up a notch.
It did, didn't it?
It's now time for the Daily Show Recap.
Can you repeat the part of this stuff where you said all about the things?
It is our Daily Show Recap here today. 2 hours in the books. Ryan Lavoie, what has happened today on the program?
Fun things. First, we visited with Brett Whiteside of On to Victory, the executive director of On to Victory, about NIL opportunities for Auburn, how that is going, the NIL collective, and just everything going on with NIL. Also asked him and relived a few of his days as director of football ops while at Auburn for Coach Gus Malzahn. And then after that, took some of your phone calls. And then ever since, we've been chatting with Eric McDade of Eric McDade State Farm and been talking about this Auburn coaching search and the Iron Bowl a little bit. And now we're about to watch some Auburn basketball in the studio and had some of that like live reaction show as Auburn gets ready to tip off against Bradley. So having a good time.
It is a fun show so far. And again, your phone calls are always welcome. 334 888 987-3401. You can listen to the play-by-play of Auburn men's basketball on FM Talk 93.9. To the phone lines we go. Our first caller due up in this hour, we've got
Jeff from Columbus.
Jeff has called into Sports Call. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good evening, guys. Man, I'm getting excited. It's Thanksgiving. We got going to Birmingham. We got about 16 people in one house. That's all.
Boy, oh boy. Do you have a controversial Thanksgiving take for us?
Oh, I don't understand what controversial means. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, like a food that you don't think is as good as other people think?
That's my sole reason for calling in. Okay. You all are crazy. What is Thanksgiving without turkey?
Oh, my gosh, Jeff.
Turkey, here's the deal. I have got 2 20-pound turkeys ready to fry. You fry your turkey. You cook your ham. You get your dressing, okay? Stuffing goes inside a turkey. Dressing is made without a turkey. You get both. You put it all on your plate with gravy. Throw the cranberry sauce out the window. Whoever brought the cranberry sauce.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, good. At least we're there.
You know what I'm saying? They're not coming back. And so somebody with the pumpkin bread and what do you call, and the rolls. You got to have the rolls. Some people like, now my daughter made my grandmother's recipe. They're 3 rolled up balls, yeast rolls. You put into a pan, and as the balls rise, they make a biscuit, right? But I always like the biscuits. What are the ones that are divided, like, into 8 pieces? Not the Grand's Flakes, but you know which ones I'm talking about?
I can kind of picture it, but I don't know what, yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? I guess they come in a little box with a bag.
Right.
You get those. You can make a little ham sandwich, a little turkey sandwich. You can sop up the gravy at the end with it. It's the best thing.
I'm getting hungry.
So, yes, I'm starving. Y'all did it. I mean, you got...
2 20-pound turkeys? I mean, you got some work ahead of you, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, but that's the funnest part. That's what me and my brother are going to do. Watching games and stuff, man, I hope the weather holds out.
Now, will you doze off in the afternoon? Like, is that a given?
Man, with that many people in the house, you can't doze off.
Oh, I think you can.
There's not a. But well, let me tell you,
Tom,
here,
Eric, Ryan, you guys pro naps Thanksgiving?
Oh, you gotta.
I'm always taking a nap.
Gotta take a nap, and then you gotta wake up, get your second, third plate, whatever it is.
You all said sweet tea. Well, see, me and my brother, we kind of take over. I've got 3 brothers, so one of them's in Washington State, so he's not going to be able to make it, but the rest are going to be there. So one of them helps with the dishes because he doesn't cook. So me, but here's where the problem is, I guess. You all were talking about sweet tea.
Right.
I know
the Lord's drink.
Goes with, yes, with fish and fowl. It's also... The Lord likes wine,
That's true.
So I'm a red wine Merlot kind of guy with the Thanksgiving meal. So if I might take a nap if I have one too many glasses. but other than that, now do you all eat late or do you all eat 5:00, 4:00 afternoon or both?
Tom.
A little bit after midday, probably around like 2:00, 2-3 o'clock is when we eat dinner.
Eric?
It's we say 1:00, but my people usually don't show up to about 3:30, 4:00. But that's the way it ends up going in my house.
Ryan,
it's trended earlier over the years. It used to be more of a Thanksgiving dinner, but now it's closer to 1 or 2. It feels like definitely before the sun goes down.
I'd say probably 2 or 3 o'clock for me in the Jacksons.
Okay, see, I guess we're just like, we're the same. Is when you cook for that many people, it's hard to get everything warm at the same time. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So somebody's going to come over and say, oh, I was going to make this. I was going to make my pie real quick. And everybody goes, well, we're making everything else. So where are you going to do that? We bring like electric ovens. Like them toaster ovens. I mean, I don't see how we don't blow every circuit in my house. We got stuff everywhere. But we eat probably around 5 or 5:30. So we always eat a little bit later, I guess, because it takes us so long to get everything set up and stuff like that. But shortly after my brother gets done with all the dishes and stuff, the poker game comes out.
Oh, man.
Everybody's playing penny, nickel, dime poker. Gosh, so it's always, man, I look forward to Thanksgiving. I love Halloween, but
Thanksgiving's a great holiday.
I really love Thanksgiving. Yes, it really is.
How long this is my question for everybody. How long are your Thanksgiving leftovers good for? When do you stop eating the leftovers?
Man, I'm going to be tired of them. As a matter of fact, we had did you all have like maybe a company party where they brought in turkey and ham?
We have in the past, but not this year. Not this year, yeah.
Okay. So we've already had a little
thing. Yeah, if you start a little early, you're probably going to get tired of it, I'm sure.
Yes, exactly. But I have learned how to
make it one more day, probably, till Saturday, potentially.
I make a turkey and ham salad, like chicken salad. I'll make turkey and ham salad, and I can eat that for couple days. But yeah, it's come Saturday I'm going to get Chinese food. You know, I mean, that's why I tell them, I go, I'm tired of eating healthy, I need something else. So but man, the reason I did call in is to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving.
Same to
let
you,
everybody
Jeff.
Be safe, and we will we'll talk to you on Monday or when.
Maybe we'll have a new football coach then. Okay.
Yeah, maybe. I still think it's going to go 8-5. Hey, you all told me a story. You all said that Lane Kiffin had two 10-win seasons at Ole Miss. That's not correct. I didn't think it was. But maybe he was saying they had two 10-win seasons in his career.
When did you think you heard that? Today?
Yesterday.
Okay.
It wasn't Ryan. It was...
Yeah, Ryan's the genius of the bunch.
Yeah, Ryan wouldn't have lied to me. I know,
he had the one at Ole Miss. I said he's on the cusp of one this year.
I know you said that. Yes, it was Brent that said it. It actually was.
And well, then we'll apologize on his behalf. Yeah.
No, but I'm just saying he has had two 10-win seasons. One was at Southern Cal, and one at Ole Miss. So, but, hey, I don't want you all – heck, I love Lane Kiffin. I love every coach you all hired for 20 years.
We're coming for those Georgia Bulldogs in 2023. That's all I'm saying, Jeff. That's all I'm saying.
I got you. I know. Okay.
I'll be thankful that, you know, what are you thankful at Thanksgiving? I'll be thankful for the next defeat at your Georgia Bulldogs. That's what I'll put out there.
Oh, my God. There you go.
Souring the conversation.
I know. It was such a good – why did I do that? I never – and you know that, Jeff. I never take shots at you. It was just –
I know you do.
It had to happen.
Hey, it had to happen sometime. Hey, if I keep – giving and giving, and you keep taking and taking, we can't have a good relationship. You know what I'm saying? You got to get back every now and then.
So that's true.
I do appreciate it. And I am thankful that you all have such a good show.
Thank
and
you,
let
man.
Me on it.
Absolutely.
So you all have a great, great time, and we'll talk to you later on.
Good deal. That's our pal Jeff from Columbus joining us there on Sports Call. That's good stuff. We had a full breakdown of Thanksgiving.
Universal
plans.
Hate for the cranberry sauce.
And then, yeah,
love to see it.
But there, I mean, James started the show by talking about how much he loves cranberry sauce. So he's on that island by himself.
Wow. I mean, at least like in the sports call world. Cranberry sauce, or the can, you know? I mean, they're both equally bad. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to eat it,
maybe something fresh would be a little more redeeming.
Oh, man. What we want to do right now is, again, Eric's here in the studio with us. We want to talk about that coaching search still. We want to talk about the college football season coming to a close for the regular season. And we also want to talk about our Sports Call Player of the Week. Here it is.
Sports Call's Player of the Week.
South Carolina quarterback Spencer Rattler is Sports Call's Player of the Week, presented by Eric McDade State Farm. Rattler had the performance many expected him to have dating back to his time at Oklahoma as he led South Carolina to a major upset over number 5 Tennessee. Rattler went 30 of 37 passing for 438 yards and 6 touchdowns. All of those numbers are career highs for Rattler. The 6 passing touchdowns are a South Carolina football program record as the Gamecocks went on to score 63 points against the Volunteers. South Carolina's 63 points were the most by a South Carolina team against a top five opponent, the most by an unranked team against an AP top five opponent in the poll era since 1936, the most by an unranked SEC team versus a ranked SEC team ever in regulation, and also the most points allowed by the Tennessee Volunteers in an SEC game. Spencer Rattler is Sports Call's Player of the Week. There you have it, our Player of the Week. It's a segment that is proudly presented by Eric McDade State Farm, who sits with us inside our studio. And Spencer Rattler, for the first time in his career, is given the Sports Call Player of the Week award. Nobody, and I mean nobody, thought that South Carolina was going to win that game on Saturday inside Williams-Brice Stadium. Spencer Rattler was in his bag, dialing up incredible play after play for the Gamecocks, and just a massive win on Saturday, ending Tennessee's playoff chances. Late in the game, Hendon Hooker tore his ACL. All in all, just a really, really sad Saturday to be a Tennessee Volunteer. But kudos to Spencer Rattler for the performance that he put on.
Yeah, I mean, look, it really was out of left field because South Carolina had just been awful the week before. I mean, just awful. They got drubbed by Florida. They were terrible. Again, I'll say it again, and offensively, they were terrible against Florida. And then they scored all the points that they've been lacking to score all year long in one game against Tennessee, ending their college football playoff chances. I mean, what a significant win for South Carolina and the messaging that Shane Beamer has been putting forth this year. And the Hooker injury had nothing to do with the game outcome. I mean, South Carolina really had them at that point. They were up three scores in the fourth quarter, I believe. So, it was a drubbing. South Carolina had 10 possessions that were real possessions and that they had an opportunity to end. It wasn't like taking a knee or something. They scored touchdowns on 9 of them. Unbelievable from Tennessee's defense, but also for a kid in Spencer Rattler who has, from the moment he started playing college football, he's been expected to be one of college football's best. And he has had okay moments, but he's really never lived up to that. And at South Carolina this year, you know, he really has not changed their equation until this game. They really felt like a team that could have done the same thing with just about anybody. They were not being enriched because of his play. And then he plays awesome football. The football everyone thought he could be capable of playing all along, he was able to play against Tennessee. And so, you know, kudos to him and South Carolina. And we live so week to week. You know, I think Shane Beamer and the sentiment on him has changed 3 different times this year, kind of, you know, at first saying, oh, there's something to this, enthusiasm around Shane Beamer, and then saying, ah, it's overhyped. Shane Beamer, I don't know about him. And now getting this big win, it goes to show you got to let the whole season play out and collect all the thoughts.
Spencer Rattler is Sports Call's Player of the Week, presented by Eric McDade, State Farm. E-Money, have you been a Rattler guy over the years? Like, what have you thought of him as a player?
It's real inconsistent. I mean, he's got all the talent, but he's really inconsistent, man. It was pretty awesome to see him put it all together this past weekend. That's who he can be.
He was talking mess a little bit. He was counting on his fingers the number of touchdowns he was having against the Volunteers in that one. I mean, he was definitely in his bag with a big-time performance against those Volunteers. Spencer Rattler, our Sports Call Player of the Week. All right, again, Auburn basketball right now. You can listen to the game on FM Talk 93.9. Tigers in a good pace early in this one, leading by a score of 20-9. About 7 minutes have gone by there in the first half. They're playing right now in Cancun. Again, the 5th game of the year for Auburn, unbeaten so far. All right, Iron Bowl comes up on Saturday. We think Lane Kiffin could be the next head football coach for the Tigers, regardless of who the coach is. Many people want to know who's going to be the quarterback next year, because we talked a lot about quarterbacks this year. We talked a lot about TJ Finley coming back for another season. Here's Zach Calzada transferring in from Texas A&M. Nobody is talking about Robbie Ashford, and then he goes on to be the quarterback who plays the most snaps out of anybody. And all of a sudden, it seems as though if you have conversations about the future of Auburn football, everybody's already moving on from Robbie Ashford as the quarterback for this program. So talk to me about QB. keys, guys, for Auburn as they get into 2023?
I honestly think whoever Auburn's next quarterback is next year, I don't think is on the roster right now. I think whoever the next coach comes in, and I'm going to assume it's going to be Lane Kiffin, I think he's going to probably look at transfer portal and bring a guy in. Holden Gerner, I think, could be that, potentially. But Robbie Ashford is the kid's got a lot of athletic ability to him, but he's just not shown that he can be a passing threat whatsoever. And that's something that this next coach is going to want to fix and get that passing threat going. So, yeah, I think it's either going to be Holden Gerner or it's going to be somebody that's not currently on the roster.
Eric, you have a thought?
Yeah, I'm in the same camp. I mean, I like Robbie. He's really talented, but I think you probably got to look elsewhere. It'd be interesting to see what Calzada can do if healthy, but I think a lot of it just really depends on who the coach is, and probably think we're looking at bringing somebody in along with the new coach.
Yeah, no arguments over here. I mean, I was very much excited about Robbie Ashford taking the job from TJ Finley. I think when you see how poor the offensive line played this year, I think it dictated you had somebody that could make something out of nothing, and Ashford certainly had some plays like that. As a matter of fact, a lot of his best throws of the year were under duress and on the run. He actually seemed to be a little less comfortable when he got time to throw. I mean, because we're still talking here weeks later. I mean, he's now under 50% for the year as a passer. He went 8 of 19 against Western Kentucky. I mean, he still did not pass the ball well even this past weekend. And so I just think Ashford would have to make such a marketable gain in the passing game that it might be too much to expect. I'm not saying that he can't come back and compete for the job, but you've got to bring somebody else in, really, no matter who the coach is. I mean, it doesn't matter if you end up, you know, with whether it be Lane or Hugh Freeze or some candidates not been mentioned, or Cadillac. I mean, it doesn't matter. You got to bring in another quarterback. You don't think TJ Finley's going to be here next year. Probably wouldn't matter if he was. You have no idea what to expect with Calzada's decision. He, in theory, could transfer. You got to get him healthy. Gerner is an unproven commodity. And so you go down the line, it's like you need to bring in someone else, and the portal is the most effective way of doing that. You know, I think I've seen some people suggest, well, if Ole Miss, you know, if it is Lane Kiffin, would they not just bring over Jackson Dart? I think he'd have to sit because he's already transferred. Yeah. So he wouldn't get to just go play for Auburn next year. So that's not the most logical thing there. So, you know, who that quarterback would be, I'm not really sure that. The picture will start to be painted here in a few weeks once everyone starts entering the portal, once you see who's working with who and that sort of thing, and then, of course, who Auburn's coach might be. But I do think that the reality is you're going to have to bring in somebody at the bare minimum to compete, but probably someone with the idea of making them the starter.
Would you be okay to see Zach Calzada get a shot at the job fully healthy and coming back from this injury?
I'm not okay with Auburn not having someone brought in.
Sure.
Period. If you tell me that Calzada ends up winning that job, I might be a little skeptical about it, but I'll accept it. But I'm not okay with a scenario where it's just Calzada, Ashford, and Gerner. I'm not okay with that scenario.
Let's see what happens, man. I love quarterbacks, and I want and Lane Kiffin loves his quarterbacks, and he makes great things happen with those quarterbacks. So we shall see what that looks like. Tonight we will see the latest installment of the college football playoff rankings as, again, the final week of the regular season. The AP poll has Georgia 1, Ohio State 2, Michigan 3, TCU 4, USC 5, LSU 6. In their latest update, do you think the playoff poll will look pretty similar to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's got to at this point. I mean, those are your undefeated teams. I think everybody else is just maybe waiting for one of those teams to slip up. But yeah, that's how it's got to unfold. I think that order is actually probably correct. So,
yeah, I don't see anything there that would be problematic. I think it's interesting Tennessee didn't fall much despite getting slammed by an unranked team. Of course, I'm speaking of the AP poll. We don't know what they'll be ranked in the true poll that matters at this point. But just going off the AP poll, logically, no reason Georgia should drop for number one. Everyone in the top four had some travails at times on Saturday, but Ohio State should still be two, Michigan three, TCU four. You know, what they do 5 through 8, I guess, is significant. I think more significantly is probably Clemson versus Alabama, and Alabama has been ahead of Clemson, I believe, right? Alabama was one spot ahead. However, Clemson is ahead by one in the AP poll. And just why I note that is if there is some chaos and Clemson wins the ACC championship, you know, Clemson, if they're already ahead of Alabama, there's no way Alabama would be in over Clemson if you got really chaotic. I'm talking TCU losing the Big 12 championship game. I'm saying USC losing to either Notre Dame or in the Pac-12 championship game. You know, I'm talking LSU not being able to beat Georgia. You know, those are three things that are varying degrees of likeliness. But the reality is if all those things happen, then you still could have a situation where, I mean, you might look towards Clemson or even Alabama, and, you know, as much as I wrote them off 2 weeks ago, you know, enough has happened, the right things have happened, to where it's not likely. Like I said, they have to have all those things happen. But then if they do happen, then it becomes Clemson versus Alabama at that moment. And Clemson got hurt on Saturday, not because of anything they did on the field. They looked good against Miami. They won that game decisively. They got hurt because North Carolina lost. And North Carolina was 13th and one loss. And if they had gotten into the ACC championship game, and it will be North Carolina, and they'll still be ranked, but they're going to be ranked around 20th as they head into the NC State game this weekend. They got to win that, obviously, too, to even remain ranked when they play Clemson. But if they had been 10th, 11th at the time that they play Clemson, you know, that's a really good win that Clemson can have at the very end of the season, right? I mean, they could have beaten a one-loss right. Carolina team that had been 10th or 11th. That's not a lot of other teams will do something better than that in the last weekend of the year. However, Carolina limps in at 9-3, potentially not even being ranked if they lose to NC State. All of a sudden, Clemson ain't going to get much credit for winning the ACC championship game. So I guess it's a long spiel there, but I think really the only thing that is going to be important to note is just seeing that Alabama is probably still ahead of Clemson at this juncture, and if real chaos happens, that could end up mattering.
Eric, I'm curious, are we in a position where over the years since 2014, when the college football playoff era began, we have seen two SEC teams make it to the playoffs? Given some of the losses from these SEC teams, do you think we could be in a position to have two Big Ten teams in the four, meaning Ohio State, Michigan going head-to-head? The loser, I'm sorry, you don't get to go to the Big Ten title game, but you only lost one game, and it was to another really impressive team. Are we now in a scenario where two Big Ten teams have a realistic chance of making it to the playoff?
I definitely think it can happen. Just, you know, it depends on what that game looks like. You know, obviously, it's got to be a close game. The loser's got to be really competitive, and then I think it will probably take USC losing, maybe. But it could be really interesting. I mean, I think all season has been pretty clear that those are, you know, two of the four best teams. It's possible, but I think it really just depends on how that game turns out. Because if USC loses, right, the next team up is, and I'm just gonna assume LSU loses to Georgia. I mean, the next team up is Clemson. And if you compare, a 12-1 Clemson ACC champion to a, let's say, Michigan that's, 11-1 but lost to Ohio State by 3, that could be really tricky. So I think it's definitely a possibility that you can see Ohio tricky. State and Michigan get in for sure.
A one-loss Clemson with ACC champs versus a one-loss Ohio State or Michigan.
Well, and the more losses that happen, you know, the better it is for the Big Ten, because, again, I was using that Clemson-Alabama scenario not even – you know, factoring in not two Big Ten teams. I was just saying they're both in at that point if all those teams lose. If TCU and USC and LSU all lose between now and the end of conference championship weekend, then, yeah, they're both in, especially with any sort of respectable game. I think the best outcome, if you're the Big Ten, even though Ohio State's ranked technically one above Michigan, I think the best outcome, since that game is in Columbus, you want a close Michigan loss. That's what you want. You want the road team to be very close in the game but lose a one-possession game.
Right.
And if you get that, then you get the scenario where, A, they're going to have to debate Michigan versus some of those other one-loss conference championships, as Eric talked about, but also it gives them tremendous upside for if any of them lose. Like I said, you know, if TCU loses, since they're behind Michigan now, I just can't fathom them somehow being ahead of Michigan with a loss, right, in the Big 12 championship game, because then no one has a conference championship, and then Michigan's loss is going to be better than TCU's, because Michigan's loss will be on the road to Ohio State by possession. You see what I'm saying? So that so that protects them against TCU. And, you know, I think it's very likely. I think really the only way you don't get two Big Ten teams is you have TCU win. That moves them up. And again, I'm going to assume a close. I'm going to give the Big Ten their best scenario and give Ohio State a close victory over Michigan. You put TCU up in the three, and then I'm going to assume LSU loses to Georgia. I think that would be a not safe assumption, but that's going to be the more likely assumption. So really, you're just comparing Michigan versus USC. And look, by the way, USC's got the hardest remaining schedule of any of these teams we're talking about in terms of, you know, I know Ohio State and Michigan, but Michigan will be done. They don't have two games left. They have one tough game left. USC has two tough games left because Notre Dame is a good football team now. This is not the same team that played and lost Marshall week two. And I know that's hard for everyone to comprehend, but Notre Dame has won eight of its last nine. They're 8-3. They're ranked. They're in the top 20.
They're going to be around.
They blew Clemson out.
Killed Clemson. I mean, they're going to be in the top 15, I think, in the college football playoff poll this week. Okay? That is not an easy game. And then you will have to go to the Pac-12 championship game where you will play, I think you'll play Oregon. I've got to re-educate on the scenarios, but I think it'll be Oregon, unless Oregon loses to Oregon State this weekend, I guess, in the Civil War. And so you've got Oregon, who is a perfectly capable team and also has a good quarterback that has been in the Heisman conversation. And so USC is going to have to beat two top 15 teams to get there. And USC, in my opinion, when I look at them, they're a little shakier to me than, say, Michigan is, just because maybe Michigan's played nobody. But Michigan, for the most part, has not had trouble with nobody. They did have a little trouble this past weekend with Maryland. But, you know, USC almost lost to Oregon State. That was a game really early in the year. It was like 19-14, 21-17 type of game. Yeah, they had to make a stop against UCLA. To their credit, they did it. But they've been more shaky at times to me this year. And so having to play Notre Dame, having to play Oregon, I think it's very possible they lose. And so if they lose and LSU loses, oh yeah, Michigan's still in. There's two Big Ten teams in.
Yeah, I mean, I think USC's in a good spot. Like you said, if they win, they're going to be in. They've also got the star power, I think, with Caleb Williams. I think people would really want to see Caleb Williams in that scenario. Personally think he's the best quarterback in college football. That's my opinion. But, yeah, I mean, it could get tricky. I mean, like you said, if USC loses, LSU loses, I mean, maybe even Clemson loses. You know, you never know what could happen. It could get really weird, but
yeah, so many people were curious about the Hendon Hooker effect and the Heisman Trophy odds, and now it has only advanced the odds for Caleb Williams and C.J. Stroud, right, as they kind of step forward and put themselves in a two-man race to win that award.
Yeah, so I think one of those guys, you know, this week got to have that quote-unquote Heisman moment. Obviously, C.J.'s got the
– they got big games coming up that they could have that.
Yeah, so if you get a big C.J. Stroud game this weekend – I think he'll pretty much wrap that up.
You think Ohio State or Michigan's going to win? Buckeyes at home?
I'm taking Ohio State. Track record. I think they've got the more talented team.
Harbaugh finally got it done last year.
Yeah, Michigan's schedule's been really soft. I mean, I just think Ohio State's just got a little bit more talent. I think Ohio State wins the game. I don't think it'll be. We talked about the game having to be close to be the best case scenario for the conference. I just think you'll probably see. I think Ohio State wins that game by, 10 or 12 points.
I think it's a close game, but I'm giving Ohio State the nod since it's in Columbus. I almost said Columbia. I'm going to give them the home field advantage.
Would you favor them in Columbia?
On a neutral field, yes.
Yeah, somehow, some way, we see Ohio State, Michigan playing Columbia. Who you like?
Go with Ohio.
I still think the Buckeyes.
Yeah, I'll go Buckeyes on
which
a neutral
Columbia
field.
Which Columbia are we talking about?
South Carolina. I would take Ohio State. Definitely taking them at home. Really looking at their work and the talent they have in some of the key positions, I think they're actually a team that could give Georgia a run for their money. Michigan, I think they are talented, but I think Ohio State's better. And that home field advantage is going to be big for Ohio State.
Covering the bases with Eric McDade, State Farm. It's been a whole lot of fun here today inside our studios. I got to get you out of here with one final question. Yes, putting sir. You on the spot here.
All right.
But I'm going to force the other guys to get in the hot seat and answer this question too. Today, on November 22nd, 2022, I'm asking you to very quickly declare a Super Bowl champion for me. Who would that be, fellas?
Wow.
I'm asking you today to declare a Super Bowl champion. Who would that be?
I'm ready.
I've got mine. It's who I've been predicting.
Let's let these guys go ahead.
Go ahead.
I've been predicting since the beginning of the year that Buffalo is going to be Buffalo's year.
Okay.
I just really like Josh Allen. Man, that dude's so good.
Mr. Lavoie.
Kansas City.
I'm on the Kansas City train. I think Patrick Mahomes is figuring some things out. He didn't need to figure some things out. They got some mojo about him lately.
And I think important subtext here, too, is they have a weaker schedule than Buffalo does going forward. They're already one win above, even though Buffalo beat them. So if Kansas City looks like they've got a better track to the one seed than Buffalo, and then when they play
home field,
in such an even matchup, if that game ends in Buffalo, I might be with Tom. I might take Buffalo, but I'm kind of projecting this out as a home Kansas City game, and therefore I'm leaning towards Kansas City. And by the way, I ain't picking the NFC team. I don't give a damn. Okay, so it's Kansas City or Buffalo.
Okay.
So Buffalo was my preseason pick to win the Super Bowl. I'm sticking with Buffalo coming out of the AFC.
Okay, I'll see if that changes in the next few weeks.
You're looking at a Cowboys fan, so I'm going to go with the Cowboys out of the NFC.
The boys got it done on Saturday.
Cowboys going to win the Super Bowl this year, baby.
The boys got it done on
Saturday.
Cowboys
going to win the Super Bowl.
They need it, man.
Let's get it.
I can't. I mean, look, 95 was a long time ago, brother.
It's been a long time coming, man. I would love nothing more. So I'm going with the Cowboys.
I could get behind that.
See, I don't hate the Cowboys like a lot of people do. They're probably the most polarizing team, or at least one of them in the NFL. You feel like you got to be, how about them Cowboys, or you got to be Stephen A. Smith laughing his butt off every time they lose. It just feels like it's one or the other.
There's no human that takes more joy in the Cowboys losing than Stephen A., correct?
No, not at all. Yeah. Not even a little bit. And so I do empathize a little bit there because I don't love nor hate the Cowboys. I actually prefer them to the other teams in that division.
It's time, baby.
And so, I hope for their sake they can put to bed some of the drama and some of the, no one's making fun. No one, relatively speaking, no one is making fun of half these other teams that haven't won a Super Bowl in 25 years. At least the Cowboys had won some Super Bowls. There's teams out there that haven't won a Super Bowl.
Does their owner bring it on them, though? That's a whole nother discussion.
I'm sorry. As 100%. Owner, general manager, and CEO of the Dallas Cowboys,
we're about to get Odell Beckham. Odell. Come on home, baby. We need you. That's going to put us over the hump. I'm going with the Cowboys to win the Super Bowl.
And if we get him, it's because of Jerry Jones. And if not, it's not my fault.
That's good stuff right there. Tony Pollard's coming on as of late, man. Zeke's doing his thing. CeeDee Lamb. We got defense, some things working there. The defense is doing
playmakers
things.
On defense.
No kidding. It's like time, it. Baby. All right. Here's our TV guide.
Our show is about to end, but we've got you covered on entertainment for the evening. Here's Sports Call's nightly TV guide.
Our nightly TV guide brought to you by our friends at White Claw Hard Seltzer. Stop by your local TK's convenience store. Pick up a variety pack of White Claw and enjoy these awesome basketball games on tonight. Temple and Richmond at 6 on ESPN2. At 7 on ESPN, the Maui Invite. Listen to this great game. Top 10 battle. Number 10, Creighton. Number 9, Arkansas. Also tonight, the Vivid Seats Empire Classic features Syracuse taking on St. John's at 8 on ESPN2. And then on ESPN 930, number 17, San Diego State, number 14, Arizona. NBA basketball tonight on TNT. You've got the Brooklyn Nets. You've got the Philadelphia 76ers. And then finally, the late game tonight on TNT, you've got the Phoenix Suns and the Los Angeles Lakers. That is your nightly TV guide brought to you by White Claw Hard Seltzer. That winds down this edition of Auburn's First and Auburn's Favorite Sports Talk Show. Tom and Ryan, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Thanksgiving you to you too. As well, bud.
Eric McDay, thanks for being here. Happy Thanksgiving.
Sir. Thank y'all for having me. Happy Thanksgiving.
That's going to do it for our show. We're on the air tomorrow at 3 o'clock. No show Thursday and Friday. For Tom Peavy, Ryan the Boy, and Eric McDay, my name is JJ Jackson. Thank you and good day.